Welcome to Stemming in Stilettos with Dr. Tasha, a podcast for and about women of color in STEM. These women are brave, beautiful, and brilliant. Their stories deserve and need to be heard. Their voice strong, their message clear, their experiences priceless. Now let's welcome this wonderful winning woman of color to the show.
Well, hi, and welcome to Stemming in Stilettos with Dr. Tasha. And of course, you guys know there's another great guest, right? So I guess I don't have bad guests. So it's like, I don't have them. I'm always really surprised, but just completely honored when people agree to be guests on the show. Started this podcast as a way for minority women to tell their story in a safe space without feeling like they had to, you know, censor themselves in any way. So anytime a woman agrees, I'm like, yes. So Lauren is here with us today, and she is going to tell us her STEM story. But first, I want to welcome you to the show. So I'm super excited.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tasha. Honestly, I'm so honored to be here. It's really wonderful. Be able to have this conversation with you is going to be amazing. So thank you again for having me.
All right. Well, then let's get it.
Okay.
So Lauren, tell us your STEM story.
My STEM story, I think, starts in middle school. So I was going to a public middle school. And where I grew up was notoriously not a good area. Mm-hmm. And the middle school that I went to, I felt that I really wanted to hold on to academics because at home, you know, my parents were in the middle of a divorce and a bunch of other things. And I really wanted to focus on myself. And at that age, I was trying to figure out, you know, who am I? What's my purpose? You know, what are some things I should focus on in life? And I really always gravitated towards math because I felt like there were a lot of other things going on in life. And I wanted something that was concrete and beautiful at the same time. So naturally, I gravitated towards math in middle school. But the school that I went to, I wanted more opportunities. I wanted to be able to take kind of more advanced classes and pursue the math and, you know, the things that I thought I could possibly gravitate towards.
Right.
So I ended up leaving the public middle school that I went to. I went home and I remember talking to my mom and I was like, I really want to go to another school. I feel like, you know, the environment that I was in the current middle school was not a good one. And I wanted to go into a different environment.
Wow.
Which looking back, I felt like if I wouldn't have done that, I would have turned out to be a very different person today. So
okay. I love, you know what I love the most about this is that maybe it's innate in you, but that you advocated for yourself really young.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very interesting because I tell people that now or, you know, throughout my life and they're like, wow, like, it's interesting that you've done that you're like, I needed to do something different. And I was like, you know, it is like, I didn't really think about it at the time. I just knew that this wasn't a good path for me or I wasn't going to achieve what I wanted to achieve in the current path that I was on.
Right.
So
listen, I mean, that right there is like, we could end this podcast right there. I mean, we will not. But at the same time, I'm like, that's a message that, especially for girls, like, we don't get that. Like,
yes.
That we're not told that, you know, so yeah. That was something that was in you to do. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's going to be a theme, I think, through kind of the rest of our conversation is, and something that I very much stand for is mm-hmm. No matter who you are, where you were born, where you come from, like, you always have the opportunity to choose, have choices.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, of course, that's kind of a loaded message, right? Because some choices are not easily made and opportunities are not always easily given.
Right.
So when I say that, it's not just, oh, everybody has a choice, right? It's a lot of times they don't. But the way that they react to certain situations, they absolutely do have a choice.
So love that. Love, love.
Yeah. So
this was in middle school. So you were able to change schools. So what happened after you did that, that you advocated for yourself?
I did. So I ended up going to a different high school. Yeah. I decided to go to a very small, there was only about 100 kids in our grade, Catholic school. I grew up in a religious environment, but I wouldn't say that myself, that I am extremely religious. I battled a lot with that, throughout my entire life, because I am a gay person as well. So I struggled with that a little bit, kind of understanding the balance between the two.
Yeah.
But everything about the school when I visited and stuff felt right to me. Everybody was accepting and nice and wonderful. And I decided to go to that school. So, like I said, it was small Catholic school. The student to teacher ratio was a little under 20 kids per one teacher.
Wow.
It was really amazing. And they offered a lot of college and high school classes and everything was so personalized. So I loved the school. It absolutely changed my life, which is amazing. So getting back into the STEM portion, ninth grade was fine. I was one of maybe three kids from a public school. So it was very hard for me because everybody else that went to the school, they've been going to the same schools with other kids their entire life.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, me and about two other kids were really,
you were the new kid.
I was the new kid. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I became really, really good friends with another girl who, was from another public school. So we clicked very early on, which was really great. And we remained friends. And when I got to my sophomore year, I took geometry for the first time. And I had a teacher, her name was Mrs. Sig, and she was phenomenal. I mean, she's still my inspiration to this day. But what's so great about her was that she was an engineer and she left engineering to teach math.
Are you sure? You didn't have me? No, just kidding. Yeah. This sounds like my story, but okay.
Yes. Yeah. So she felt very passionate about inspiring students, and specifically women as well. So I very naturally gravitated towards her. And at that time in my life, I mentioned before, my parents were going through a divorce in middle school. In high school, both of my parents were getting remarried. And it was kind of a really, really hard time for me because it was dealing with two different types of step parents and kind of trying to navigate that. And also just, I don't know, being ninth, 10th grade as a female as well. I had a lot of things to think about.
It's a whole lot.
It was a lot. And so I didn't really have a good avenue to kind of discuss that with anyone. So she became not only a star teacher, but she was more of a mentor to me as well, because she married a man and had more of a blended family too. So she could kind of give the perspective that I needed, which was the perspective of the parent in that situation and kind of getting both sides. So that was really special to me. So not only was she an example of, you know, coming from industry and teaching and being an inspiration, but she was an inspiration in all areas of my life, which was really great. So she was amazing. I then decided throughout high school that, you know, I want to have the same impact. I mean, my life would have been so, so different without her, without the school, all that kind of stuff. So I decided then that I wanted to be a math teacher because,
Okay.
Because she inspired me in that way. And I have always had a love for math. So that it just kind of fit naturally for me. I was like, wow, you know, I wanted to be the inspiration for my students that she was for me, because I feel a lot of other students sometimes. And when I taught at different schools, sometimes students come to school and they really look at their teacher as more of a role model or this figure that they're needing because they may not get it in other areas.
Yeah, I feel this. I mean, know my story is, you know, I left engineering and started teaching, taught math. And actually, when you were talking about geometry, I smiled because that was my absolute favorite subject to teach.
Yes.
And people were like, why? And I'm like, I don't know. There was just it was just magic about it. Right. Mm-hmm. Helping turn something so abstract into something that students could see and feel and touch and like make a connection with was like my absolute favorite thing to do. So and I don't think that math always made sense to me too. So I feel you on that in such a way that when I decided to teach, there was not another subject that I even thought about teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then having someone with, you know, that with that background that you could connect with on like the level that you needed to connect with her because of all the stuff happening in your life. That is probably why people stay in teaching.
Yeah, honestly. You know? Yes. Yes. You know? Absolutely. And so that was so impactful for me, and it really changed my perspective on a lot of things in life. And so I decided I wanted to be a math teacher. So I finished high school.
Yeah.
And did that. And it was always my dream to teach at the school that I went to alongside Mrs. Sig. That's kind of my overall dream. And so hardly anybody ever gets that opportunity. Right.
Right.
So I went to college and I got a double bachelor's. I did a bachelor's in math. And then I also did a bachelor's in secondary ed math. So I did both of those, graduated, and then had the opportunity to go back to the school that I went to and actually teach alongside Mrs. Sig.
Shut up. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. I thought, you know what, this is so funny because I'm already at the end of this story and I'm like, oh, something happened and it wasn't. I'm so surprised and so happy that it happened that way.
Yes, it truly was such a dream come true. And being able to be in the classroom and see that sort of impact and impact the students at the same school with the same teacher was just phenomenal. But it gets better.
Okay.
So I know it gets better. So my best friend that I was talking about, we are both from public school.
Mm-hmm.
She was in college as well. She actually got her degree in pre-K through four, but also majored in religion. She came back the following year and we both got to teach together at the same school.
Oh, this does get better. I love this story so much.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. And then, so I was teaching, everything is wonderful. Everything's great. But I've always wanted to do more. Like I was in the classroom and I always have such this drive for math. And I just kind of felt something saying to me two different things. Like I really wanted to be more of my, authentic self, you know, being able to freely express that, you know, obviously, as I mentioned before, being a gay woman and things like that. I was teaching in a Catholic environment. So, you know, not that anybody ever was, you know, rude to me or anything like that, but it wasn't an environment where that was publicized.
Got you. Okay.
So it's not that, you know, I was forced to hide or anything like that. It just kind of wasn't something that was really
about. Right?
I talked about. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it was more. So I guess the question for you then is I may be totally wrong and tell me if I am, I can be wrong. Kind of like a don't ask, don't tell thing, but like unofficially.
Yeah. Like, again, I mean, that place has my heart and everything like that. It's more of just, you know, being in that space in general, you know, which I signed up for because I did.
Because you want to, I mean, and I get that, but did it feel like, and this is me really trying to understand, did it feel like there was just like a part of you that was missing?
A little bit. Yeah. Also a part of me that wanted to be a little bit more authentic for my students in a more visible way.
I felt that.
My students and also just women in general. Mm-hmm. So I had no intentions of leaving by any means, but it was something that I was kind of mulling over, thinking, you know, later in my life, you know, if things progress, you know, what am I going to do? But I've always kind of had this thought in the back of my mind too, that, that I wanted to get into higher ed and teach at the collegiate level. So I was like, okay. I decided to get my master's. I got my master's while I was teaching in secondary ed math. So I finished that. And then I, you know, taught a couple courses at multiple universities throughout Pittsburgh, just adjuncting, you know, at night while I was teaching during the day and things like that. And I loved it. I loved the collegiate space. I loved, you know, and I taught at different universities. Some were Catholic, some were not. So I got a big range of different environments, which was really interesting, and different students, types of students, all kinds of things, which was really great. But then I decided, I said, okay, I love this. I'm teaching both in the collegiate space. I get the higher math. I had the high school space. I got that kind of environment. And I thought, you know, I wanted to still do more. I wanted to be able to impact teachers and students on a larger scale.
Okay. I love this. Yes. I'm not sure where this is going, but I'm excited.
Yes. So when I was in the college space, I have always been a firm believer of the way that I teach math. I wanted it to be authentic, visible, and maybe not as traditional. Yes. In the way that, you know, obviously, like when we're teaching the Pythagorean theorem, sometimes we just put the formula up and we have, you know, kids go through the formula, but they can't understand the formula. They don't know what it means. They don't know where it comes from. They also can't represent it visually. So I wanted to change all of that. And I was doing so in a different types of way. I would use obviously more 3D software like GeoGebra, Desmos, things like that. And that helped. Giving a little bit more authenticity to problems. But to me, there was still something I'm like, it's still not enough. You know, it's not authentic enough. So when I was again in the college space, I was writing a lot of my own curriculum because I wanted to do this more authentic type of teaching. And I decided, you know what, I want to study this a little bit more. I'm going to go back for my doctorate. So decided to apply for my doctorate. And I was granted an award where if I went and taught for the university, they would offset some of my credits. So I could teach for them and, you know, they would do that. But in order for me to do that, basically I'd have to leave teaching high school full time to teach college full time. And I was, you know, it was probably one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make. Because obviously I loved the school that I was at. I loved my students. I mean, as I mentioned before, that, that school means the world to me. So it was really tough. But a part of me knew that there was more. Kind of more waiting, you know, that I wasn't done. I just didn't feel done. So I decided to do it. You know, left teaching high school, went to teach college full time, got the experience, was doing all of that, writing my own curriculum. And while I was writing my own curriculum, teaching college full time, I stumbled across, somebody actually reached out to me on LinkedIn, which was somebody from Vex Robotics, asking me to contract with them based off of my experience doing math and the sort of stuff that I was doing at the college level, kind of. I was blending math and technology at the college level. Yes. And Vex is robotics. So they do two different types of robotics. They do competition robotics and they also do educational robotics. So I was asked to basically contract and write some curriculum. Well, I started to do that and then eventually ended up doing that full time. So that's how I ended up at Vex. And it just felt right because, you know, the stuff that I do at Vex, I started off as a curriculum developer, then became a senior curriculum developer. Now I'm the director of instructional technology. So what I get to do now is create resources and videos and all kinds of stuff. And I'm doing a lot of research on it as well that feeds into my dissertation. But being able to take concepts such as the Pythagorean theorem and give it much more real context. So, you know, a robot, for example, traveling from point A to point B, and it needs to do that autonomously. We're going to code it to do that. But what is that distance? And how do I find that angle?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have to use the Pythagorean theorem in order to do that. Which is,
I love this so much. I feel like we're going to be here for a long time. Okay. I got this. I got it. Okay. So what I really love about this is that actually it's just, let me calm down first. I love the idea that you have been able to take, they're not even abstract concepts in math, but I mean, geometry, if I feel like I've had this conversation like no less than like 1,000 times, right? Like geometry is so hard and I don't understand how anybody ever gets it. And I'm like, it was just so fun.
Yeah.
It was just so fun to me. And being able to anything with polygons, I'm like, I'm your girl. Okay. Let's talk about polygons. But I really like the idea of really taking those concepts and making them relatable, right? Mm-hmm. So if a student is doing whatever it is they're doing with the robot, like then the Pythagorean theorem makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. And they're plugged in and doing something they really feel some kind of way about.
Yes.
So it kind of takes this thing away of factoring or using the Pythagorean theorem, this formula that's like, for what? Because now it's like, oh, okay, it's going to get me that one step closer to my robot being able to do, say, B, turn the way I need it to do it. And so now it has relevance.
Yeah.
And that's lovely.
It's
just lovely.
And it's something, too, I've been studying a lot. I know Joe Bowler out of Stanford does a lot with mathematical mindsets and mm-hmm. kind of understanding ways to shift students' mindsets about math, about problem solving, about all of these things, the way that they view dealing with approaching math, really. And I've watched a couple of clips of her interacting with students, and she will pose a problem, let the kids think about it for a little bit, and then throw in, you know, something like the Pythagorean theorem. Like, well, we could use this as a tool in order to help you solve your problem, you know, instead of like, today we're learning the Pythagorean theorem because it's chapter 4, lesson 2. Here's the formula.
Right. And it meets these standards, right?
Exactly. Instead of, here's this real life problem we're trying to solve, get our robot from A to B so that we can score points or, you know, deliver medicine. It's a medical robot, you know, things like that. We're, you know, gathering stuff, samples from Mars. Obviously humans can't interact in that environment. We need a robot to do so, you know? Right. So giving it real purpose, but you know, the math behind all of that and talking about how it works and why it works. And to your point earlier, making it relevant. And that approach to me, you know, watching kids interact with that type of problem solving strategy and giving them those skills, those tools as well.
Have you seen, and this is like, I think this is every teacher's dream, and this is why teachers keep teaching. Another reason why teachers keep teaching. But like, have you been able to, in your role currently or working for VEX, being able to see it? Because you guys get to see it kind of like in real time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can see like the light bulb come on, a student make a connection between the math and what's happening with the robot, and being able to sort of, I don't know, I want to say rejoice, but sort of that connection is, again, I think it's why teachers continue to teach.
Absolutely. There's a lot of different ways that we get to do that. VEX is a worldwide company. So a lot of our materials that we write for both students and teachers are used in over 100 countries. Obviously, you know, I get the privilege of being able to travel and interact with teachers, large scales of teachers and their students as well. But there's also some that we get to do locally. But every year, as I mentioned before, we have the educational robots that are used in the classroom, but we also have the competition robots. So every year we have something. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so we're okay. Go ahead. I interrupted and I shouldn't have.
No, that's okay. So I've seen some schools, they'll do the education of robots as a class and part of the class. And then the students will take that information and use it for the competition robots, like as a club. I've also seen schools that just do the club as a class. So there's so much variability in the way that they do it. But we have a competition every year. It's called, we have two. One's for plastic robots, more middle school age range. The other is metal robots for high school age range. But we've seen variations of that. Some middle schools do metal, some, you know, things. Mm-hmm. Elementary sometimes does plastic. But regardless, every year we release a game, one for each platform, one for the plastic, one for the metal. And the students have all year to practice this game and build a robot to play the game. And then they compete locally at states. And then the goal is to get to Vex Worlds.
Wow.
So Vex Worlds happens every year. We have, you know, people from, you know, 30 plus countries come to Vex Worlds and, you know, thousands of students, and they come and they compete. And, you know, myself, you know, everybody from our team and, you know, our company, we go and we get to see the students as well as the, you know, parents, teachers, coaches, everybody take all of the information that, you know, they've learned and they get to use it in order to compete and play this game. But it's not just, you know, they're not just taking these skills to learn math. They're doing so much more. They're doing problem solving. They're doing collaboration. They're doing so many things. Being able to articulate their thought process, which, you know, some students can solve a problem, but they're not good at explaining how they actually solved that problem or their reasoning behind it, and that kind of stuff. So I get to see it on a lot of different scales, some in school settings when I go around and do that kind of stuff, and also some at Vex Worlds, which is actually coming up this week.
Wow. Okay. So mm-hmm. I have questions. I have questions.
Yes.
One. Okay. So if I were a teacher who was looking to engage my student in, I don't know, trying to bring more, I'm going to say relevant, not necessarily real world, but relevant mm-hmm. pieces of curriculum to my students. And I wanted to use Vex. I've discovered Vex. How do I engage? Like, what are the steps? What do I need to do if I'm, mm-hmm. you know, just doing a classroom? And then let's say I wanted to take it one step further and maybe have a robotics club. And then how do I take it, you know, beyond that to say, you know what, I think we're good enough that we could compete. Like, what are the, do I have to choose one or the other? Can I switch or can one morph into the other? Like, I got questions.
Yeah. So what's so great about all of this is the dream, the goal is that Vex has a continuum. So mm-hmm. I've mentioned two of the platforms already, the middle school plastic and the high school metal. There's also VexU, so colleges could also participate in that if they wanted to. But we have robots from kindergarten all the way to collegiate.
Wow. I do not think I knew that. So a kindergartner, mm-hmm. a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, mm-hmm. love this.
Yes.
Okay, I'm listening.
And we know that obviously kids that age, right, they're working on dexterity. They're working on, you know, social emotional learning is huge at that age. So the robot that we have for that age range of students is appropriate for them. Actually, I have one right here. So this is it's called a 1-2-3 robot. Mm-hmm. It's very small, has a little art ring. Obviously, you can decorate it. We use it for story time for the robot. It can play sounds, lights, you know, you basically touch the buttons and it, you can code it, learn sequencing, things like that. Okay. But a lot of our curricular resources are focused around, like I mentioned, that age range. Mm-hmm. So the goal would be, you know, students actually start with this robot. And as they progressively move through, they get into some of the other robots. So, you know, we start very young with that. They learn the basics of sequencing, of problem solving, mm-hmm. of resiliency. Mm-hmm. Those sorts of things. And then they grow into more of the plastic robots. So we'll learn a little bit more about building and engineering, because obviously the 1-2-3 robot, you know, doesn't have those pieces. It's more of a computer science introduction because, right. you know, kids at that age. So we continue all the way up into the metal robots. So to answer your question, you know, what is the goal? Does it flow from one to the other? Ideally, yes. You know, they learn some skills and concepts with one of the platforms. They take that information and they grow with Vex as far as, you know, getting some of those other skills as well. And there's a bunch of other things in there, like different engineering and, you know, different languages from blocks to text and all right. kinds of things.
So do y'all, so what I think I'm hearing, and you didn't necessarily say this, so correct me if I'm wrong, is that, so you guys are teaching kind of hardware and software. So a student does learns, you know, they get their hands dirty and can put this thing together. But they're also saying learning some coding, right?
Yep, on that, absolutely.
On that side, which is the way to do it. Yep. So I might be a little biased, but that is the way to do it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense otherwise. Like you know, it's just sort of like, how does this work? Mm-hmm. And they have to be tied together because, again, to me, it's one of those things where if there's something wrong here, this is not going to matter, right? If there's something wrong here, this is not going to matter. They have to go together. There's a Absolutely. Relationship that I think when we first started talking about coding and robotics, like, was sort of, both things were talked about in isolation. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but why are we doing that? Like, they go together. Like, I mean, Absolutely. They're in a full-on relationship.
Yeah. And I also feel that way about kind of math and STEM in general, right? We teach math in school in isolation. Mm-hmm. But getting into computer science and, you know, discrete math and all of this stuff, like, it's not just one or the other. We're using all of the skills all together, you know, so.
Yeah. It's what I've been saying for the longest time. Because people would, you know, even now, that, and it just sets me off in a way that it's like, people are like, okay, I don't know if I want to talk to her. But sure. Especially when we start talking about STEM and people are like, oh no, we're going to have a science section. We're going to have a technology. And I'm like, why are we doing that? Because STEM is all the things. It's all of them together, yep. right? You know, it's like, name a scientist that doesn't do math, that probably hasn't been engaged in some manner of the engineering scientific method, who's not using technology. Name one, please tell me. You know, it's just like same thing. And I'm like, I just don't get this need to put them, you know, silo them. I don't understand it. I don't. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. but I do have a question. So sure. We kind of touched on it, but then you didn't necessarily expound on it. And it's my fault. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to correct it.
Okay.
So tell me about your dissertation. What's it on? What are we doing?
Yes. So I am actually studying mathematical mindsets. And I want to, I'm going through studying different things right now as to exactly what the final product would look like, mm-hmm. but basically producing material for students and for teachers so that they can teach certain mathematical concepts via robotics in a way that fosters a growth mindset.
Ooh. Okay. This has a book written all over it to me.
Does it?
No, because, well, first off, let's just establish that, well, actually, this is another question for you.
Sure.
So my dissertation was on, I did a qualitative study on the math and science attitudes of middle school girls in gifted classes, right? Middle school, African-American gifted girls in middle school classes.
Okay.
Because it was my experience that I had a class, and when I was teaching, I had this class where there was like one boy and like 18 girls in this class. And the girls were like, I'm not good in, you know, Miss Anderson, I'm not good in math. And I'd be like, girl, you just got a 97 on this test. Like, right. You know? And I was like, I don't understand where the disconnect is mm-hmm. between your actual abilities and the way in which you are viewing them, even though you have concrete, you know, examples of, like, you see how this, I'm not good in math and you blowing out this test, don't go together. Like, where does that come from?
Yes.
And girls in particular are like notorious. The boy in the class, in this class, he was like the lowest, the lowest earner, if you will. But he had so much confidence about his own abilities. And I'm like, this is fascinating to me.
Yes. Like, yes.
What is happening here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so one of the things that I discovered is that, you know, like some of our math attitudes can be adopted from our family and our atmosphere, who we are around, where we draw our support from. Mm-hmm. I didn't study mindsets. I didn't. It was more like your attitude towards your own abilities, right? And sure. And of course, that, since I did it in mathematics and science classes, because it was the same thing in science. It's like this. It's this sort of like, I don't understand why you are carrying around this knowledge about yourself that is untrue, and it yeah. is affecting your ability to perform in classes. Some of them, it was just the most fascinating things to me. So I'm really interested in seeing what you will be able to find as it relates to these mindsets, because, and the work that we need to do to overcome them. So, and then like growth mindset is just.
Yes.
So I'm super excited for you.
I am too. And a piece that I left out that I'll expand on a little bit more is the nature that I'm doing this study is actually a self-study. So I am doing a self-study on how and why the curriculum is being made. Mm. Because something that I think that I really want to contribute to the field is to, you know, get people to understand why certain materials are the way that they are, or for teachers to understand it and then be able to adopt it, right? Because, you know, I've done some other research about just in general attitudinal surveys before using Vexed after, both students mm-hmm. and teachers. And we've seen growth throughout that, basically saying using our materials makes teachers feel more confident.
Yeah.
So I wanted to take a different angle on this approach and really focus more on the actual curriculum creation to really understand and kind of expose the way that that happens, again, in order to, because from what I've read so far in the literature, and I could be missing pieces, but to me, I don't see a lot of that exposure, kind of, you know, pulling the curtain back and being like, this is what we're creating and why, this is why it's important.
Yeah.
And this is how it can change your classroom and your students. And I really wanted to make that more visible, which is why I'm taking angle of the self-study.
Well, I love this. I love everything about this. I can't even wait to see what your results are. And then, okay, so I have two questions.
Yeah.
One is, and this might be too early for you to be thinking about it, but like, what is your plan? What do you hope to do with this after it's finished?
Yes. So after, I'd like to do further research on actually the implementation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, doing the dissertation will obviously be the creation phase.
Right.
But either myself or other people in the field, I'd like to do more research on, okay, I've made this thing and I've done a thorough explanation and research on its creation. Now let's actually test it and see what happens. You know,
love this. I feel like this is going to be monumental in the world, right? And especially if we're talking about curriculum development and how it's currently done. I can honestly say this is probably the most exciting thing I've heard in a really long time.
I'm excited. Thank you.
Because I just, yeah. Well, here's the other question.
Sure.
And I don't know how to ask this because I'm a former teacher and you're mm-hmm. a former teacher. Well, we're teachers because I don't know that if you taught, you were ever former. You're just the teacher.
Right.
What I was able to discover in my dissertation was that the students were absolutely affected by the attitudes, but the mindset of the teacher. in their classes. And some of them started really young. You know, they can pinpoint the teacher in the grade where this teacher said, you know, oh, I don't think you'll be good in math, or, you know, or something along those lines, where the girl internalized that knowledge and was like, well, if my teacher's telling me that I'm not going to be good in math, then I'm not going to be good in math. Mm-hmm. Or they heard a conversation where, you know, the teacher was like, you know, said that they didn't even like math or something like that. And I was like, oh, this is tragic and sad. Mm-hmm. I know personally of teachers, especially those in elementary school, who are just like, yeah, I only spend 30 minutes on math, you know, because it's the subject I like the least. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to a teacher, and she got really mad at me, but okay, you know, when she had said something similar, and I was like, well, I wouldn't like my kids to be in your class, right? Yeah. And so she just got so mad. And I was just like, no, because, you know, math is a foundational building block to students learning how to problem solve very early, you know. And so if you're given 40 minutes, but you're only spending 20, what is the experience in the classroom for my kid?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
But what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts?
No, I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I also, as I mentioned before, the student resources, you know, what the teacher will be facilitating in the class, you know, I'll be working on, but also the teacher resources behind the scenes, because you're right. The teacher's mindsets going into this, it has to be a certain way, or the way that it's delivered won't be as impactful, if at all.
Right.
So that's definitely something. And also I'd like to clear up with some of this material. There's a lot of misconceptions on what growth and fixed mindset is, because some teachers just think telling kids they could do it, you can do it, is a growth mindset. And it's not.
No, it's not.
But you know, if you poll teachers, and there's research out there, they're like, do you have a growth mindset? They're like, absolutely. But then they're praising students on, you know, things that would be more of a fixed mindset instead of growth. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of misconceptions there.
You have work to do. You have whole work to do, especially around that. That's true. It's so funny. I was in a teacher's classroom the other day. I was doing, it was on a Saturday. So they assigned me a classroom. We were in a school. And that was very prominent, the fixed mindset and the growth mindset. And, you know, and then the third poster was, which mindset do you have, with ?
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder. And so when I looked up and I said, I wonder what's the mindset of the teacher.
Yes.
And I was like, 'cause that wasn't talked about. It was only, you know, it was to the kids. So.
Yes. And it's also kind of another fold or phase to this is, you know, we're talking about STEM, and there's so, you know, especially post COVID or during COVID, and now because of it, you know, we want to have all these initiatives for STEM, and we want to do this. But, you know, what makes good STEM curriculum? When we talk about math curriculum, for instance, we have all of these standards, and we have, you know, certain textbooks that are well known for all of this curriculum and stuff like that, but we don't have that for STEM or in general, you know what I mean? So that's why I'm so passionate, and why I'm so grateful to be able to work with VEX and have this platform of worldwide, you know, influence, to start to do that work and to lay that foundation of, you know, this is what the research is saying. We're conducting our own research, and you know, this is what's effective, and, you know, providing.
Because, I mean, it's needed until, it's so funny, because I think one of the things that I've discovered, you know, I discovered in my dissertation, this year will be 12, will be 12 years old. So like I'm old research. I'm old. This is old research. one of the things that, you know, we discovered is, of course, that there's no universal definition of STEM education, right? Like every mm-hmm. state gets to define it. Every corporation gets to define it as, you know, whatever they deemed it is. Mm-hmm. And whether you believe we should have a universal definition of STEM or not, it's, you know, okay. But we don't. And so by proxy, then how do we then have the discussion about what constitutes good STEM curriculum or good STEM activity or project or lesson or whatever we're going to call the thing?
Right.
Because there, what are the standards, right?
Yep.
And not even necessarily like state educational standards, just the standards, right?
Yeah.
These are the things that would promote it, which would be the things that would a kid, an adult, a baby would be able to know, think, do at the end of a good project. Like, what are those things? That's usually my standard when I'm writing curriculum. What is it I want this individual, these people to know, think, do at the end? Yep. And if I can say that and prove that and have, you know, data to support the knowledge that this curriculum did those three things, I'm good.
Right. Exactly. And part of the reason, again, I'm passionate about this and curriculum writing in general and the mindsets, and because my first love and will always be math.
Yeah.
Is to, you know, spark that conversation and really think about it and drill down. And I really want students and teachers to be able to, you know, use robotics and use our curriculum to have that experience. And
love that.
You know.
Okay, so now going back to Worlds, because Worlds is this week, and let's tell everybody what week this is. So they will know how can a person, and I don't know if they can, but so tell me, where can they find out more information about VEX and VEX Robotics, about this world competition? Where will you guys be? How many people are going to be there, teams, all the things? Like, I need all the details.
Yes. So any information about VEX, including both the educational and competition, can be found at vexrobotics.com. There's tabs at the top, one for competition, one for education, and a bunch of other things. So that will give a general overview. As far as, you know, if you wanted to get started, there are informations on that page. But currently VEX Worlds this year is in Dallas. So that's where we will be.
One of my favorite places.
Yes. So thousands of students, things like that. We have great resources. You can also go to help.vex.com, which is our VEX library. Basically, it's a collection of articles and all kinds of stuff. But we've done interviews with students at Worlds about coding, about engineering, about STEM. We've interviewed all girls teams. We've interviewed a bunch of things. So some of those interviews are located on there as well, which is if people want to learn more or see what the experience is actually like, they can do that and see some of those as well. VEX Robotics also on their YouTube channel has a bunch of videos of Worlds and interviews and, you know, talks with engineers.
Is there a way for a person to be able to watch it live or no?
They do. You can live stream it, I believe, from the VEX Robotics website. If you go under the.
Okay. See, now you're going to have me like watching VEX Robotics at work, right? This is not the thing.
I think it's just, I'll have to double check. It might just be the finals, but I think you can definitely live stream it, but I will double check on that link for you.
OMG. Okay. So you guys check out the show notes because it'll have all these links to where you can go to see VEX live, or go to the website and get more information. Or if you want to start VEX or just are trying to gather information about what it is you're trying to do, go there and get all the information that you need. It will be, of course, in the show notes. So please read the show notes, people. Read the show notes.
Yes. And if people have questions, of course, you know, reach out to me directly. I love talking about it all day. So
Lauren. You do not want, you are going to come in and there's going to be all of these emails, like, no, ma'am, go to the contact page, fill out. Okay. Because Lauren does not know what she is asking. She does not.
You think, am I asking too much?
Listen, they're going to be like, what did she really just say? Oh, no, she didn't say it. She didn't.
No, I didn't.
Okay, so one last question. And of course, this is the question that I ask every single guest on every single show. Mm-hmm. So if you could travel back through time mm-hmm. and talk to your younger self, what advice would you give her and why?
I would give her the first piece of advice would be that the only person in your way for achieving your dreams is you. You know, I think a lot of people, including myself when I was younger, thought that I had so many obstacles and barriers, and I did, but most of them were me getting in my own way and questioning my own worth and my own talents. And I think it took me into my later 20s to actually finally realize what all of that meant.
Wow.
I think that's the first thing. And the second is that there is no advantage in life to conforming to what other people want you to be.
Oh, she's a girl after my own heart.
I think for you to truly shine and take your place in the world, you have to be as authentic as you can. And again, conforming to what other people think about you or think that you should be doesn't get you to not only true happiness, but also true potential.
Yeah, love. And it's so true. Like one of my favorite shirts, I love a good, comment shirt.
Yes.
One of my favorites that I have is, it says defy conformity.
Yes.
So love that. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you today. And I know my guests are going to, I feel like this one's going to be probably the best yet. Because I know they're going to be able to relate to what you're saying. Hopefully Vex Robotics will continue to grow and prosper, and you'll get a little bit more folks that'll be visiting the site lately after this airs. And I really want the world competition, which is happening this week, y'all. So check out the YouTube channel, go to the website, just to continue to grow and just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and hopefully opportunities for women, women of color, women who are in any way feel marginalized. This is our time. And so, Vex Robotics is helping to push that cause, meaning get you into STEM. I'm for it. And so, Lauren, again, thank you for just agreeing to have the conversation with me today. I have greatly enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for even the opportunity. I mean, being able to talk about these things and really the reason why, and to get other people the understanding so they can relate and move forward and inspire everyone really to get into STEM and the value is just so exciting. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. You are welcome. All right, you guys. So that is the end of this episode of Stemming in Stilettos. And I know you're going to walk away with a lot of information. So again, check the show notes. But as I end every episode, you guys keep yourselves safe.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Stemming in Stilettos. Please check out the show notes to get additional information about today's guest or today's topic. You can find the podcast on every major podcast platform. You can find additional information about Dr. Tasha at www.drtasha.com. Thanks again, and don't forget to tune in every Tuesday for the latest episode of Stemming in Stilettos.